Welcome to The Right Chamber, the podcast that takes you inside the NHS to explore what really makes a hospital a hospital.
Each episode, we sit down with the people who keep healthcare moving, from doctors, nurses on the front line, to students, the support teams, administrators, corporate staff, and everyone in between. These are the voices that often go unheard, but together they form the heartbeat of our hospitals.
Our aim is simple: to share authentic stories that are accessible to the public, meaningful to NHS staff, and a reminder that healthcare is more than treatments and wards. It's a whole community working together.
So whether you're part of the NHS family or simply curious about the people behind the service, join us as we open the doors to the conversations that matter here in the Right Chamber. Professor Atiq Rahman is a consultant vascular and endovascular surgeon. He began his career as a junior doctor at the Dudley Group in 1993, returning as a consultant in 2004. Passionate about advancing medical education, he has served as a director of medical education since 2018, shaping training and supporting the next generation of healthcare professionals. Welcome back to the Right Chamber podcast. My name is Jaspreet.
My name is Victor.
And today we have our boss, actually, Professor Atiq Rahman.
Thank you. Especially exciting episode with you, Prof. Rahman. Let's start by learning a little bit about you. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thank you very much. I think he's been waiting for a little bit long. I know you have been asking me for
begging,
some time.
Begging, you've been begging.
And here we go. So about myself, I qualified, I did my basic medical degree from Pakistan. I came into this country in the early 90s. In fact, my first job as an SHO in those days, used to be SHOs, was in this hospital, Russell Hall Hospital. Then carried on my basic surgical training. And then after the basic surgical training, I went on to do my master in vascular medicine in St. Mary's. And that's where I spent some time in with Professor Andrew Nicolaides. And came back to West Midland, got onto a higher surgical training program. And then I finished my higher surgical training in 2003. And in 2004, I was a consultant, at that time, general anovascular surgeon. So that's where you most probably my very brief medical career in this country. And soon after, obviously, when I was appointed a consultant in a home hospital, because I'm based in Dudley for many years. My father's been here for many, many years, since early 60s. And so I don't think really there could have been any better place for me to find a consultant job. So I started my practice, but I always had passionate for teaching and education, even when I was a higher surgical training doctor. And I think into my first year as a consultant, my mentor, and I must say the consultant who really inspired one of the consultants to become a vascular surgeon was Ron Grimley. And he very sadly died with a massive heart attack. And he again had a great passion for education and training. And in fact, he built this North Block in the Russell Hall Hospital for undergraduate medical education. And that's where how the name stands at the moment, following his death. And I took all the responsibility in those days as a clinical sub-dean and then later on head of academy. And so that's where I am.
Wow.
So we've taken over your office right now.
Yeah, I had one office and then I had another office. Don't forget, we only had one initially clinical teaching fellow, and currently we have 8 clinical teaching fellows. So I'm pretty sure they need more space, and that office is better served for those clinical fellows, teaching fellows.
So we know a lot about you as a vascular surgeon, and we saw some footage from back in 2005 about a project that you started. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
So I think what happened to be, as I said before, my basic medical education was from Pakistan. I really saw a great suffering of people and how they are deprived of very basic healthcare facilities. And then I was obviously was in school, when I was in a college, then I was in a medical school. And I saw all that happening. And I can really tell quite a few stories. I mean, how the people could not be transported back from the hospital to their home, even after death, because you have to find the transport. And the people had more worried, how would they take the bodies back to their home rather than somebody very close to them has died in the hospital, maybe even after acute appendicitis, or even giving a young lady giving a childbirth. So those sort of suffering was always in my mind. And of course, when I came here, I have to look after my family. Very fortunately, I certainly had two children. They're all qualified, and they are medics as well now. And at that time, I had to look after them and my wife. And once all this obviously settled down and I became a consultant, and that's the time I said I've got to do something, need to give something back.
You always had it at the back of your mind.
And I always had that in back in mind. And on top of all of that, what happened, my father suffered from a motor neuron disease. And that was really devastating towards the end of my heart surgical training program when I saw him in that state. Very fortunately, I would say he did not suffer a lot. He was acutely unwell only for 3 months, and very sadly he died. And so when I had all that in mind, I said, and whenever, to be honest, I used to go back home. My brother is a doctor as well. And I used to see his suffering. And I said, we do a lot. We do a lot of operation to save people's life. But I can't do anything because of the nature of his disease, anything for my father. And yeah, you can imagine how devastating that disease is. So that was really most probably the most important point in my life. When he died, I was absolutely, there was always something in my mind. But at that time, I said, I want to do something on his name. So I obviously set up a trust, Abdulrahman Memorial Trust, that's the name of my father. And I started to raise some money. And would you imagine, I raised almost £1 million.
Wow.
You know, in 5 years. I started the project in 2005, as you just saw the clip. And within 5 years, I built up a hospital. And a lot of people could not believe that hospital could be built and equipped, I would say, for the basic facilities. I'm not talking about very high fancy CT scanners and all that, but certainly a good X-ray machine, ultrasound machine, and this and that, with £1 million at that time. And I did that. And that's the way how it all started.
Wow. And at that time, it must have felt like such a big dream, a whole hospital. How do you gather the motivation to just say, this is something huge I'm about to embark on, but I will just go for it?
Yeah.
It's not everyone that can just do that. How did
it
you?
I think that's really, Victor, is a good question. And a lot of people question me. My colleague challenged me working in this hospital and in another hospital. And my sister challenged me and said, you are not a big celebrity. How are you going to raise the money? Have you got the money in your pocket? But I had the ambition. I had all the stuff in my mind, how I'm going to do it. And I said to my sister, whatever I've got, I'm going to spend it.
Wow.
And let's see what happened afterward. But it was such a huge thing. And over the 5 years, I must say, in this country, there's a lot of community from that area where I come from, live in this country in various towns and centers like Birmingham, Bradford, London, so many places. So I have to reach out all those communities and basically try to tell them the how fortunate you are, living in the NHS, where if you have any problem, how quickly you can get the service. But look at your relatives and look at your old friends and families who are living back home. They don't have these facilities.
They didn't have the privilege to.
So can we do something for those people, for your families? And they were all very sportive, and you can see, and that's the way how.
Yeah. So it's not just a lone man journey. You got other people to tap into your vision and see what you wanted to do and see the benefits that they can just create for those who didn't have.
That's sort of the whole vision I had to create when I was doing fundraising. You know, various dinners, various walks, various games. We had some cricket matches as well. So there's so many different type of stuff we were doing, and that's the sort of things I was trying to tell people why I'm doing it and how would you see the benefit in that community. And you can imagine the saving lives from simple stuff. And I never ever try to we're going to go for a very advanced healthcare facilities, maybe cancer facilities. Maybe that could happen, but certainly I was talking about the childbirth.
Yeah.
You know, what is the maternal mortality, you know, when a young lady gives a childbirth. I mean, it's astonishing, you know, one of the worst, most popular in the world, you know, one in 16. After every 16 childbirth, you know, maybe a woman or a child will lose their life. You know, that sort of stat. And then dying from dehydration, dying from infectious diseases. So having to travel from that remote village, from that place to a tertiary care center, which is the closest is Islamabad, Rawalpindi, is quite a distance. And the people may die. So why not we just provide them the basic facilities and then ship them, you know, to a tertiary care center? That's exactly what's happening now. We are not really doing most probably a very advanced healthcare, although there are some advanced healthcare facilities available like Dallas is now in that place. However, the emphasis is on maternity and emphasis is on emergency care. And then, you know, transport in an ambulance a patient to nearest, you know, tertiary center.
Hmm.
So just to clarify, Bevel is a small town or a city?
Yeah, it is a small town. It is a small village, I would say. It's about, I would say, 50 miles from capital Islamabad. The roads structures is much better now than maybe it was 10, 20 years ago. So it takes about an hour and a half. However, in that surrounding, you know, from the major center, there is no major other bigger hospital. Although there are some other government facilities, you know, what we call Tehsil Headquarters Hospital, but they still lack some of the facilities maybe this hospital could provide. And just to be clear, this hospital is not completely free for everybody. However, because I don't have any funding, you know, to support this completely. However, I wish it was a completely free, but we do support maximum number of people, you know, with the free treatment, the one who can't afford. Of course, the people who can afford, they have to pay.
They should pay. Mm.
They have to pay. And they do pay because otherwise they have to travel, the travel cost and all the other costs are there. So in that sense, there's a lot of saving is there and it's in their doorstep, you know.
Mm. Yeah. And if you look at like the impact of this, you know, the obvious thing is the saving of lives, but it's a lot more than that, because it's creating job opportunities, you know, it's creating training opportunities for people who are learning, and that will then have downstream effects on the whole community around that area. So it's not just even the saving lives, it's a lot wider than that. I mean, did you imagine all the impacts?
Absolutely. The one thing, obviously, which I'm struggling for over, I would say, this hospital was opened in 2010 and is almost 15 years now. The operational side of the hospital is about 30-40%. 60%, like primarily inpatient facilities, are not there, and again because of the limited resources. Mm. So if I have more resource, so certainly I will equip and I will do all the funding. So there's a lot of potential there in the hospital. The services, which I must say I'm very proud of it, like there are 32 patients currently in the hospital getting dialysis.
Wow.
And that is completely free, you know, and we don't charge anybody. We do have a eye up surgery service to a lot of patients. on a daily basis. We have an optometrist. He obviously sees and screens all the patients and the patient who need cataract operation. You know, the surgeon comes. And again, that's free to everybody. We have a gynecologist who does the maternity service, and she is again on call 24/7. You know, if there is any emergency cesarean, she does the service as well. We got midwives. And then we have some specialists who are coming from Islamabad and Rawalpindi, you know, like the cardiologist and the gastroenterologist and nephrologist who are looking after, you know, all those patients. However, I would like to expand those things. The other thing which we really do and is very fascinating, where I get more involved, is since 2014, we have a hernia team, international hernia team. We go there every year, and over 5 days, 4.5 to 5 days, we almost do 100 hernia operation.
Wow.
I've actually seen that on Instagram.
Yeah. Wow. And that's completely free. Wow. And that's, you know, everybody, a lot of people now wait because we do, during that time, very limited, but if we have an opportunity, we do cholecystectomies, we do hernias, and again, adult and children's herniatomies. So all those things are done. In spite of all that, we had various camps, medical camps, you know, off and on, gynae camps, and those things, you know, are very well.
So do you invite people from like other countries to come and like, so that's good training opportunities,
yeah,
as well?
So whenever we have those camps, there's a lot of local trainees, you know, from the local hospital, like from Rawalpindi and Islamabad, they join. And they have a great opportunity to watch the surgeon across the world.
Yeah.
You know, like this time, we had a surgeon coming from New York. She was there. And then over the years, we have surgeon from Australia, from Austria, from Turkey. So there's a lot of people. And certainly, we have the surgeon from this country. And again, some of the trainees, you know, go from this country as well. And they participate in that hernia camp.
Wow.
This is fascinating.
Wow, very fascinating. And this isn't the end of the vision, isn't it? There's still more that's in the pipe works, or the dream hasn't stopped.
The dream, I don't think the dream will ever stop. And I don't think really the dream should stop.
Mm.
You know, anybody who wants to be part of that sort of job, number one, it gives you a great satisfaction. To you, in spite of my very busy life, you can imagine, in this place, I continue to do the work before the end of the day. And early morning, the first phone call goes to my admin staff over there, and then see what's happening. And my wife is heavily involved. So we all and of course, now my daughter, who is a senior gastroenterology trainee. My son is a vascular trainee as well. So we are all heavily involved, but we would like to involve the wider community as well, especially the medical community, because this is a big dream, and I would love to really take part. Hopefully in future, you know, if we have again a source, going into the nursing school, the dental school, and the medical school, if those, obviously the right resources are there, you can imagine it's a huge task. It's not as simple as one would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one thing I like to pull out, you know, for our listeners, we'll have medical students listening and resident doctors listening, and that is just that. Take note of the things that you experience as you're progressing through your training. And if there are places that you feel you don't quite like, or places that or gaps that you feel that you can fill, or things that you feel that you can just impact, then take all those things on board and just gather the motivation, and you can make such a massive impact.
I must say, when you are a medical student, you want to pass your exam and you want to become a doctor. And certainly those are the pressure, the tensions, and a lot of challenges that's there. Then you are a resident doctor, and then you have the other challenges. You have to pass again, you have a lot of exams, you find a job and your family. And once you are settled relatively, you know, and you will be never settled in your life completely, I can tell you, there'll be always challenges, but you should always have some ambitions. A lot of people do have ambitions, you know, whatever you want to do. And I think while our job being a medic is primarily with human beings, with being a person, you know, who can talk to people and make their life better. I mean, this is one of the job I always felt the most thankful and most rewarding, I would say, where you can give something back in my case, you know. But everybody should have an ambition to do something different.
Yeah.
Drive to make a change. Or...
And it's not only just doing your job. In your life, number one, again, being a medic, you have to be a good medic, but you have to be a good human being.
Yeah.
And being a part of that, you know, community, you know, you have to do something. And no matter whatever that is, you know, for different people, the things are very different. In my case, certainly, that's what I wanted to do. And I would strongly encourage, because this is something that really gives me a lot of satisfaction. And getting somebody's battle from their illness, trying to help somebody and to relieve their symptoms, relieve their pain and relieve their suffering, all of that, you know, is amazing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So coming back to what you want me to ask you, what are the challenges you're facing in the LHX?
The biggest challenge, I must say, the biggest challenge is the money. You know, I wish I had more money and then I can expand my dreams and I can do more work in my hospital. So I continue to raise some fund. I continue to do some charity function. Number one, to obviously do the running of the hospital. And of course, if I want to expand some of the services with the current hospital, because there's a lot of, as I said before, there's a lot of potential. I have been talking to people whether I can make their transplant center, because we already have patients like a renal patient who having dialysis, if somebody need a renal transplant, whether that could, because we got have excellent theatres, you know, the state of the art, and we've got the wards and we got some critical care facilities. But it's just the question is how we equip those things and how we can get to the human resources. So those are the sort of things. So I will certainly leave my contacts, my trust, my charities is a registered charity in this country, and we will leave the contact. It's ARM Trust, Abdurrahman Memorial Trust. So if anybody wants to donate anything, that'd be great. But it's not all about donation, it's about contribution.
Yeah.
And if somebody can contribute in any way, the last time we had a medical student from Brentford.
Wow.
She joined us. And because, well, luckily she was obviously had the family relationship almost in the same village. We got two initiatives who goes almost every year in the Hernia camp, and again they have some family relationship in the village, and their family belongs to that village, and they go every year doing the Hernia camp, and I'm very grateful to those individuals. So any contribution from any person,
maybe we can ask our listeners to maybe give us some ideas on fundraising events.
Yeah.
We can work on that as well.
Brilliant.
Great. So any ideas on fundraising, or that will be wonderful. So any contribution will be great, and that will be really good.
Brilliant. We'll make sure to include all those details in the descriptions on the various platforms that we release this podcast. Brilliant. Just in the interest of time, I think that's a lot to chew on and digest.
That's a lot. Maybe we will have another day of the hospital life in Russell Hall. And because I very briefly, you know that I really do have a passion for education and the training, and being in the job as a director of medical education, it's a really privilege, I must say, to work in this hospital. I have a wonderful support from every staff member, from my own department, from executive team. And that's most probably one of the reasons I continued in this job over many years. And I love seeing my medical students here when I got involved with their teaching. And now, obviously, I'm old enough to see them as a senior trainee and sometimes even a consultant.
Wow.
You know, in different areas. And it's fascinating. And I think one of the jobs which I would certainly encourage all my colleagues and everybody to teach medical students, because teaching medical students is very rewarding, and the medical student never forget their good teacher,
yeah,
whoever have taught them. And being a good teacher is absolutely wonderful. Of course, you know, with our clinical jobs, we have to do our clinical jobs, because that's the way you become even a better teacher, I would say. That's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe we can bring you back for a part two?
Yeah.
I will be delighted to do another part two. And then we will explore a little bit more about what's going on
in the teaching world.
In the teaching world and the clinical world as well. Because everything really is very important, you know. And at the end of the day, we all here. And whenever I do induction for medical students or for resident doctors, I say, we're all here for patient.
Yes.
If there was no patient, which is never going to happen, you know, because that's the way how our body is. So we get old and we will have some disease. So, but if there was no patient, there'll be no job for us. For most of, not only for doctors, for nurses, for other people. So just remember, we're all here for patient.
Absolutely.
And we can talk a little bit about the human factor as a doctor and, well, just clinical stuff.
A lot of things.
Yeah.
Being a doctor. It's very important to be a good doctor.
Good doctor.
Absolutely. And it's very important to be a good person.
Yes.
Yeah.
They both go hand in hand.
They go very hand in hand.
Absolutely.
Because I love it to be a doctor, but I love it more when you talk about being a good person.
Person.
Mm. Okay. Because that really makes the life so enjoyable.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And we will make sure to delve into that in the part two. We'll leave our listeners in anticipation for now.
Thank you.
Right, so that comes to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much, Prof. Raymond, for
coming
on to the Right Chamber podcast. It has been a wonderful time learning about you and the hospital. And we are looking forward to the next time.
Yeah. And the place is called Bavel International Hospital. The Bavel name is a town where I was born. That is a Bavel.
We'll put all the details in the caption.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you for all our listeners. As always, do interact with the videos and the audio file. And if you'd like to participate, definitely reach out to us as well, and we will get back to you. All right.
And please don't forget to give us some ideas for a fundraiser, please.
Brilliant. So, signing out.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.